Each passing summer, movie season seems to begin earlier and earlier and is increasingly crowded with comic book-inspired action films, which have themselves become crowded with characters and storylines as Hollywood studios are making larger bets on films and their franchises. The new Warner Brothers film Batman vs. Superman: Dawn of Justice is a case in point. I'm Charles Horek, and you're listening to On Film. Today we begin with a discussion of the new film Batman vs. Superman: Dawn of Justice, which, among other things, represents Warner Brothers' attempt to rebuild a franchise based upon characters from DC Comics. To discuss the film and the crowded upcoming summer movie season, I'm happy to have back on the program frequent contributor Kyle Alvarado. Good morning.
Morning, Chuck. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you for coming in. We both threw ourselves this week into the melee that is Batman versus Superman. Why don't you outline the story and your thoughts for us on the film that got the highest grossing opening weekend in March on record?
I'll try. I mean, part of the glory and agony of this movie is that there's about 53 different subplots in it. But let me see if I could sum it up. Batman, played by Ben Affleck, forms an unhealthy obsession with Superman and the expresses shades of xenophobia in the process. Superman, you know, dealing with the aftermath of Man of Steel, is sort of wrestling with the question, where does he fit in this world? Who does he answer to? What political stance does he have there? And then with the other side subplots, you have Lex Luthor, played by Jesse Eisenberg, trying to consolidate power with knowledge. And then you also have Lois Lane, played by Amy Adams, following this semi-conspiracy thriller, trying to trace back Luther's business deals. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of other threads. A lot of them are set up. A lot of them are left dangling. But I think that's the problem with this type of movie.
It's packed full of stuff. It's kitchen sink filmmaking. And it feels like, to me, when I was watching it, it has so much going on that it was almost put together by committee.
Yeah, yeah. You sort of feel like the writers, Chris Terrio and David S. Goyer, had to present a bunch of different versions, and a lot of things were rejected, but they were told to keep in there because, no, we have to address this in a sequel, and we have these franchises to spin together.
Is that part of the problem with these big superhero films, and particularly this one by Warner Brothers, which really is, they're staking a big claim because they have fallen behind Disney, which now owns Marvel, that's just going gangbusters on the Marvel universe. Warner Brothers is on the DC Comics side of things, and with these two legacy characters like Superman and Batman, is there so much riding on this film because not only are these films in themselves anymore, but they are the foundation for a whole universe of films that have already been plotted out over the next 5 years that are going to be coming at us. And so there's so many demands to cram all of these other threads into them that we will then follow over the next 5 or 10 years as Warner Brothers rolls out more films.
I think so. I think the art of a standalone superhero movie, or even a standalone superhero trilogy movie, like with The Dark Knight or Spider-Man.
Seems so quaint now.
Yeah, yeah. They seem so, they feel so long ago. That doesn't exist anymore. Now we just have these sort of connector films that lead to the one big event film.
I don't know if you can recommend this film, but I wholeheartedly cannot. I would recommend people save their money. This was a 2.5 hour bloated, airless, murky, aesthetically unpleasing, frankly. And I put a lot of that on the director, Zack Snyder, who, as many people know, is the director of smaller computer graphic heavy films like 300, Sucker Punch, Watchmen. He was given $250 million to play with. And to me, he's a reverse alchemist. He took gold and turned it into lead. It just drops heavy in your lap, this film.
I don't know. I'm like Harvey Dent, Two-Face. I'm of two minds of this. I think if you're a fan of the genre, or you're a fan of Batman or Superman, I think you're going to find a lot to enjoy in this movie. But if you're looking for good nuts and bolts filmmaking, I think you're going to have a lot to nitpick. And 2.5 hours, you're going to find a lot to dislike.
Really? So even as a fan of Superman and Batman, you know, those two characters don't get much time to really, you know, we are rebooting with the Batman side because we have a new Batman, Ben Affleck, as you pointed out, and particularly on his side of the fence, Ledger, I didn't feel like there was enough for us to really get attached to Ben Affleck. And not that he does a bad job in the film, but that he's not given a whole lot to work with to create this new character, which is rather different from the last Dark Knight we've seen.
Yeah, it's an interesting take on the character. I think it's nice to see sort of a grizzled, older, crueler Batman. I think he does a perfectly fine job as a Batman. I don't know if I would call him the best Batman.
No.
My heart belongs to Michael Keaton.
Well, those are better scripts too.
Yeah.
And better directors. I just don't think Zack Snyder was up to this. And when I say there's no air in this film, every scene is feels disconnected from the movie as a whole. It's like there was somebody checking boxes of, we have to have this scene, we have to have this scene, we have to set up this character, we have to set up this new future franchise, we have to set up this underpinning for something that's going to come 3 years from now. And there's no moments of quiet. And this is a good time to talk about Hans Zimmer's score, which is constant, perpetually beating and bombastic and overriding. And again, that's a director's choice to score almost every scene. And maybe every scene in this film has a score, but it's just overripe. And Zimmer came out this week and even announced this would be his last superhero film.
Well, a decade in it. Yeah, it's a good time to leave. It's interesting to point out. I was listening to the score and what I've noticed. Most composers recycle themes over and over again. That's perfectly fine. But with this one, it was more noticeable. I picked up distinct motifs from Hannibal and Pirates of the Caribbean in the Lex Luthor theme. I mean, those are direct motifs that he just lifted from himself, which I don't know, was I think it was disingenuous to the character.
I wonder if this is a good time to jump off into the summer that is coming before us. You know, one of the amazing things about Batman versus Superman to me is that summer seems to begin earlier and earlier, the summer season. And the fact that this opened in March on Easter weekend, and without giving any spoilers away, there are some resurrection motifs in the film, which it seems really bizarre and cynical that they would open this such a dark, brooding film on the Easter weekend. But I think Warner Brothers knew what they had and knew that it couldn't stand the competition of a full summer where we get almost every other week a major release, particularly of comic book films. What are some of those comic book films coming up?
Well, in May we have Captain America Civil War and X-Men Apocalypse. And then in June we have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which I don't know if I would consider the superhero movie, but it's lumped into the genre. And we also have Suicide Squad and Doctor Strange in the fall. I'm most excited for Suicide Squad, personally.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. because all the rest seem to me, at least from the trailers, to follow in the Batman versus Superman motif, which is several years in with both the Avengers franchise and many years in with the X-Men franchise. It's like we've run out of villains. We've run out of the escalating, you know, end-of-the-world scenarios that pulls these teams together. And like Batman versus Superman, we now have the so-called heroes. It's all about internal strife. It's about factions within these groups. They're fighting each other. You and I both saw Batman versus Superman and probably sat through 25 minutes of trailers for each of these films. Mm-hmm. All of them look really dark, physically dark, and heavy on the CG, heavy on the computer graphics. Yeah. Which I think, you know, particularly with the response last year to Mad Max Fury Road, I think audiences are really approaching a point where we're just tired that there's no physics to these environments that are being created in computer. And George Miller, what he did so brilliantly in Mad Max was bring back the thrill of the actual physics of the real world, that we see people in real settings doing real things.
Yeah. I think another thing to note when you're watching all these trailers is that you have a lot of really powerful actors getting sucked into these movies. You have William Hurt returning to the Marvel Universe. You have Oscar Isaac getting plastered in makeup for X-Men, and you have Viola Davis in Suicide Squad. And then that's not even including...
And Will Smith.
Will Smith, yeah. And it's interesting because you have these good actors getting sucked into these franchises, but it's nice to see them sort of break out and do these smaller, more interesting movies. You have Mark Ruffalo and Scarlett Johansson doing movies like Spotlight and Her and Under the Skin.
So is the question, what would they be doing if they weren't being sucked into these Marvel and DC universes that seem to be the resting ground of Academy Award winners now? I mean, the last Captain America had Robert Redford in it. Mm-hmm. We were just talking about Batman versus Superman. I mean, my gosh, that list, that is one of the things that came to my attention was you have Jeremy Irons, Amy Adams, Jesse Eisenberg, Lawrence Fishburne, Diane Lane, Holly Hunter. The list goes on and on. And because that film is so packed with demands, each gets a scene, basically, and a few lines, and it is gone.
Yeah.
Sometimes literally gone.
At least they're gone in an entertaining way.
I started thinking during Batman vs. Superman, and you point up all these other films that have sucked in our very best actors, just whether these ensemble films are the right tools for them, and it seems like a waste of talent.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was thinking about it maybe kind of cynically. Maybe they take these films so they can do the smaller, riskier pictures. Mm-hmm. But who knows?
Right. It did remind me a bit that these films are increasingly buying their prestige by buying these named actors and putting them into these characters. And occasionally, particularly with the Avengers films, Joss Whedon is a writer who can raise the bar on how these scenes are laid out. And I think he's a great example of what's missing in Batman versus Superman, which is these moments of characterization, these quieter moments where you get to see these people as human beings. And as you pointed out in your thoughts on Batman versus Superman, there are a lot of themes going on there that could be explored further, but there's just no time in that film. It just races headlong from one scene to the next in a disjointed fashion. I'm also wondering if we're coming to a point that Steven Spielberg brought up, maybe it was, I think, 2 or 3 years ago now. He and George Lucas were talking, and Spielberg made the point that he thought there was a bubble in the blockbuster arena, and that very soon we were going to see a collapse of interest in these kinds of films. And it seems like that bubble is still expanding because there's more and more of these films. They're being lavished more and more attention.
Breaking records, box office
records.
Even if they're slightly insane records, like largest March opening ever for a non-sequel property.
Well, someone on CriticWire wrote a very interesting piece that we're in an age of too big to fail movie making, where Batman versus Superman doesn't have to be a good movie, doesn't even have to be a mediocre movie, can be an outright bad movie and still make enormous sums of money for Warner Brothers.
I remember watching the reboot to the Spider-Man movies, and I remember thinking, that movie with those actors, Sally Field and Andrew Garfield, that would be the type of movie where a much more smaller, dramatically focused picture might actually do the franchise some good.
I had time during Batman versus Superman to let my mind wander, believe it or not. And I started thinking, you know, I love classic films. And one of the ways that classic films are sometimes written about by film critics and film writers is to take a historical perspective in which they will look back decades on a film and place it in its historical time and period and see it through a lens that sees a film as a mirror to the time it was made. And I'm wondering if films like Batman versus Superman and Captain America Civil War and X-Men Apocalypse, which are all these dark films about destruction and inner conflict and paranoia and fear within groups, if those aren't going to be positioned 20, 30 years down the road by film critics as really mirroring our own time of a time of polarization and infighting.
I think so. I think the superhero genre has sort of taken to the post 9/11 world and, mm-hmm. And in larger contract, they've also taken to the post NSA world. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a really good article discussing how Avengers Age of Ultron is basically a parable for the NSA. You know, deep down in these movies, you have these heavy themes, but because of franchise building and universe creating, it gets lost in the shuffle.
Well, Kyle, thanks for dropping in to discuss not only Batman versus Superman, but the upcoming slate of comic book movies.
Thank you.
My guest today has been frequent On Film contributor Kyle Alvarado. We've been discussing our thoughts on the new Batman versus Superman film, Dawn of Justice, and the upcoming slate of summer comic book movies in general. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.